I guess it's time to canvas on. And I accept the crimes I've done.
Welcome to Unsigned Hype episode 28. On this episode, I have the pleasure to talk to the incredible artist Alnef from Florida. Prior to your interview, I asked Alnef which song he would play for someone that wasn't familiar with his music yet. Alnef chose his song Van Gogh. If you're not familiar with Alnef's music yet, here's a snippet of that song before we jump into the interview.
Man, I think I am the crown. Can't bear the weight of my head. If I had spoken sooner, would my words be worth their truth? If chaos was a lifestyle, I'd be on the cover of every Forbes magazine. Dying was an art form. Could I be a Van Gogh, pretty please?
This is Unsigned Hype. The song you just heard is called Van Gogh by Alnef, who's joining me from New York today. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome you to the show. Alnef, why is Van Gogh the song you would play for someone that has never heard your music before?
Oh, man. Well, first of all, thanks for having me. It's awesome to be here. I think Van Gogh is like a statement song for me, like especially for this upcoming EP. It's the centerpiece of the entire EP. So on the one hand, it's like, it's cool to show people like this, the main centerpiece of the EP, as well as like, I feel like the song is probably one of my best songs I've written, and I have like a very special connection to it. So like, I feel like if someone's going to listen to me, like that's a great introduction to me.
Van Gogh to this day is, in terms of streaming numbers, it's the one that's been performing the best. I think you're almost at 500,000 streams on that song. But you're also mentioning at the same time that it's a song that holds a very special place in your heart. Where's the connection there? Do you feel like there's a connection between it being such, it having done so well and also it being your favorite?
I'm not sure, actually. That's a great question. I feel like it's my favorite because it's like a great song to me, at least. I'm like, I listen to it, I'm like, wow, like that's a really good song. So that it's possible that like, it's my favorite because it's great. So everyone else likes it because it's great as well. They think it's great. But a lot of its success like was actually because of a crazy, like really awesome situation. There was this guy on TikTok who just like uploaded it and was like basically like kind of like made fun of it. Like he like basically has like a platform where he's like, hey, this guy doesn't have great marketing, but he has great music. So he made a video using the song and like got 250,000 views.
That guy. Oh, wow.
So it was really awesome. It's such a great dude. And he just like one day I look at my phone, I'm like, what's going on? Like my streams were going up. So it had done well before, but like that was a huge booster and it got it in a lot more, like it showed up for a lot more people because of that. So yeah, definitely like I would attribute some of its success to TikTok for sure. But people have told me there's something about that song where like they feel, there's something that like feels universal about it. It's kind of like, it has like a clear meaning, but at the same time, it could be taken a lot of different routes. So it's, I feel like it's something that is very accessible and like universal. And also it doesn't sound like everything else, which is kind of cool. Like you don't hear that song every day on the radio. So it's got like some special knack, I think, but yeah, I'm very happy with like where it's gone. And like, I've always really believed in that song. So I'm just like, it's so cool to like see it succeed, you know?
I mean, now we're going to talk about your upcoming project, which will be released this weekend. It's called Vincent. So for me, when I was thinking about the name of the song Van Gogh and the name of your project, I have to think about Van Gogh's life as an artist and him only really being recognized for his art after he passed. Is this something that you think about? Is that your art is not really being appreciated right now enough and that you wish you could take this to another level faster, maybe?
Like, absolutely. Like, you got it, like, on the nail. Like, exactly that. I feel like part of that song, I wrote that song when I was 18 during COVID. Like, it was lockdown. Really just like really dark time. I was in a dark place. And it's just like, I was writing a lot of songs at the time and I was just like feeling, you know, like no one really like knows you until they know you, you know? And I had like started building up a little bit, like my fan base at the time, but it was still pretty small. And I was just like, you know, I really love my music, and like thinking about the idea that like maybe people won't hear it, just like, it's kind of scary. It's like, you know, like what if things don't work out the way I hope they will? And yeah, like a huge part of that song is like me kind of like saying like, could I be your Van Gogh? Which is like, maybe like give me the fame before I die, you know, like give me like, you know, like appreciate what I make before I'm gone. And that's one of the messages from the song. It's got like a lot, it's like multi-layered. So there's a lot of different like stories in there, but that idea, you like definitely got that on the nail, like exactly that for sure.
How does that get felt for you? I mean, I understand the journey that artists are on, you know, building their career. It can take many, many, many years to get to the point where, you know, one achieves success and stuff like that. I mean, you haven't been doing music for that long. I think actually you started, you know, writing songs already at like, yeah, 60. How old are you now?
I'm 22 and I started when I was like 15, 16.
15, 16. That fear comes relatively fast, right? Do you understand yourself where this fear comes from of longing for fame so fast and wanting things to go so fast? Is that a fair interpretation of what you just described?
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, like I saw like when I was 16, 17, like 18, I was seeing like the rise of other artists my age, and I'm like, wow, like they go from something, like from nothing to something so quickly. And it's like, you see that and you're like, whoa, that like, that's me. Like, that's gotta be me. Like I'm next, you know? So like definitely for me, it was seeing other artists like that I love so much and like seeing them like rise to fame and seeing them like build so quickly that gave me like definitely an unrealistic expectation of like, oh, that's how it will happen for me, you know? And I was like 17 thinking that that's what's like successful. Just, it'll be like this overnight thing that happens. You know, you put out one song and like everyone hears it and then you're good, you know? But everyone has like a different path. And like what I'm learning is like, nothing will go as you expect. And it's, you know, it's life. Like it's not like things don't run the way you want them to, but they run how they're meant to. And, you know, I try to believe that. So, yeah. You know.
No, I agree. So maybe to give people a bit more perspective on the kind of music that you do, can you describe it in your own words, that sound? And with that, if you could, talk to me about finding it.
Great question. So personally, it's like, it's hard for me to pin down exactly what genre I'm in because I kind of float around a lot of places, especially like with this upcoming EP. Part of what I was like, the way I put it together from the start was I was kind of focusing on like, how can I make the best of multiple elements? Like, it doesn't need to be as cohesive as it is diverse. So the goal with this EP is just like each song is like takes you to a whole new world, a whole nother space, and like sometimes a whole nother genre. So like it's hard to like pin down to one genre, but if I had to like pin it down, I'd probably say alternative pop. I think like pop structure for songs is usually like what I lean toward in terms of like the way pop songs are structured and the way they're like more accessible. And then the alternative is just like everything. It's, you know, like I've listened to so many different genres. Like I've really taken a lot of my own time to like research and like, and listen to a ton of genres. You know, like I love country, I love jazz, I love rock. Like I really listen to as much as possible. So a lot, like all music has really affected my genre, like my own, the way I write, the way I create. So it's kind of like, I'd say it's alternative pop, you know, some would say like bedroom pop because it's like produced in my bedroom or like my friend's bedrooms. But in terms of like me crafting my own sound, I'd say like the biggest things are one, like just listening to a ton of music, like going through as many genres as possible and like finding what's amazing about each of them and like seeing how I can connect with that in my own music. And like, it kind of like subliminally like affected how I write. And then there's like more conscious influences, like my favorite artists who like Panic at the Disco and Frank Sinatra and Julia Michaels, you know, like people that, like there's something about them that I'm just like, I'm just like captivated by, and it like definitely spills into my music. So
could you pinpoint which elements you've really been influenced by and you've taken and applied to your own musical styles? Is that possible?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. For me, I feel like Panic at the Disco in particular, my favorite band of all time, like what gets me about their music, you know, like their first couple of records, one thing about them is every single record was different every single record had its own sound, its own world that was like, they weren't just doing the same thing every time. And it's something I really, I was just blown away by, like, wow, like you can be an artist and you're not pinned down to one genre. And that, like, that was a huge inspiration for me to like not be limited to like just one form of songwriting, like, and one genre and one sound. So that's how Panic affected me for sure. Especially like the writing, like a lot of the lyrics are just are incredible. Like the production is beautiful. So a lot of it has affected me and like the way I produce and the way I create, and like, you know, it's definitely influenced me. And then like, you know, Lorde, like what gets me about Lorde is like her writing is incredible. Her production is wonderful. And then also like her style and the way she presents herself and the way she like, the way she even like phrases sentences, you know, like I'm on her email list and I get like emails from her. Just like you see the way she like writes sentences, you're like, oh my God, like you're a real artist, you know? So Lorde, like her passion and her style has definitely like really affected me. Like, you know, the way she shows up on stage is like, she's like a fireball, you know? And it's like, it's very, very like influential to me as well. Yeah. Lana is incredible. Like her voice is just like stunning. And her, also her, like, she's got like this like grit about her. Like no one sounds like Lana. No one makes music like Lana. And like, also all of her albums have a completely different energy and different vibe. And that's like, I don't know, I really love that. Like I love artists who can span multiple places, like who they're not limited to one thing. They're kind of like, they're bigger than one sound, you know? And I love that.
Why is it important, you think? Because I understand the need to create music that is multifaceted, let's say. But you know, there might be people that like one particular sound and they like that one sound of the artist, and they don't like that artist breaching out to completely new genres. How do you balance that? How do you balance giving people what they like about, for example, about Van Gogh, right? Your song Van Gogh is a, you know, that's a very specific kind of sound that I think people might be associating you with now. And you're mentioning that your new project coming out this weekend goes into many different directions. Like, how will you keep these people that know you're from Van Gogh in touch with that new style? Is that something that you think about?
Honestly, like, I don't know why. I don't really think about, like, in general, I don't really spend so much time focusing on, like, what the audience will think about music. At least I'm very happy that I feel this way. Like when I'm making music and writing my songs, luckily it hasn't really gotten to me like, oh, what will people think of this? There are a few times where like I'll write something, I'll be like, oh, I know who would like this. Like I know who would appreciate this. Or, but overall, like I'm much more focused on like creating for myself and like writing the songs from like my own real perspective without like a focus on like, what will the audience think? Is this marketable? Does this fit? Like, I don't really think about the numbers so often.
That's the best way to do it. Yeah.
I hope I can keep that. I really hope I can keep that because like, luckily, and also, I mean, the fans who I'm lucky to have, you know, like the fan base I'm lucky to have seems to be, you know, interested in my perspective more than a single song. Like, you know, like I think like what artists have to share and what we have to give to the world isn't just like the music, it's the perspective within it, you know, it's us, you know. When I write a song, I'm giving over like a piece of myself. So hopefully people who like Van Gogh and connect with it deeply, like what I think they're connecting with me. They're really connecting with like my soul and like my experience and my perspective. And it's like, you like that in one place, I'm sure you'll like it in another. And honestly, like I understand if people are like, I know a lot of people are much more limited in what they listen to. So in general, like I'm not like going crazy, like off the rails. Like I'm usually keeping, like I said, I have the pop structure. So overall, like with there being a pop structure, it makes it accessible. So like, that's what keeps things like, I'm not going like crazy. Like it's overall, it'll differentiate. Things will be different. Like things will change. But I think like what's in common is my perspective, is my writing. Like I'm always writing my own songs. I'm always sharing my own opinions and like my own experience. So I feel like if you connect with Van Gogh, like I really think someone who connects with Van Gogh would connect with these other songs on the project. And honestly, if they don't, like that's okay. Like there's always going to be more, you know, there's more. If someone only likes Van Gogh and nothing else, like, you know, there'll be more in that direction as well too, you know?
No. I think it's the right approach. I think it's the right approach to not be focused on numbers. I think that you know, and this is something that you've been doing clearly, which is something that I've seen a lot of the artists that I've talked to do a lot, is really trying to focus on the quality over the quantity and not, you know, become like a viral TikTok sensation. Because I think songs can really, you know, Van Gogh did so great on social media and it helped push the song. On the other hand, me personally at this point, you know, with every Taylor Swift song being on Instagram and TikTok in every single video, is like, people do not hear the song anymore. People hear a sound that they use. And yeah. I think it's a good approach that you have. But with that, I'm still curious to hear your own perspective on this idea of not really releasing on a regular basis. Because I mean, you put out your first song in 2019, and since then you've released 5 songs, I think.
Yeah, I think 5 or 6, yeah.
Which is not a lot. So, or is it? Like, I don't know. The market is so oversaturated, and this is a word I've been using a lot in my interviews because it's always a topic that I talk to about artists, is what's the best approach? Is it a song a year? Is it 10 songs a year? Is it 10 songs a week? Like, how do you approach that yourself?
To be like really honest, it's not, in that scenario, it's not really a proactive thing. The reason I haven't released so much music is actually like a pretty technical reason. I would love to release more music. Like it's my favorite thing to like put out music and work on music. But I'm an independent artist. I'm funded completely by myself. Like everything I do, like I do with my friends in their bedrooms. Like it's very bedroom underground. Like there's no one throwing me like stacks of money going, hey, take the, like, you know, like, here's all my connections and all my money. And like, here's a bunch of producers. Like everything I've done, I've really like found myself. I've worked with my friends. Like it's all very, like, it's all underground, you know, and it's all like independent. So because of that, without funding, things just take time. You know, like I've learned in life, like you either pay for things with time or money. Like that's how it works. So if you don't have the money to pay for something, it'll just take more time, you know, and you'll just pay with your time. So with all my music, like I've really paid with time, you know, like this project, this upcoming EP took 3.5 years. Like we thought it would take 6 months. It took 3.5 years. So just like, you always think things will be faster. They are never that fast, especially when you're independent, you know, like there's just no funding really. So that's the real reason why things have been slow to move in terms of releasing music. Also, I am a bit of a perfectionist. Like I really care about putting out things that I like love. Like I can't release something that I don't really love, you know? And if I don't feel like it's perfect and like all the way there, it's not ready yet, you know? So because of that, like that's definitely been a part of like making the process be a little longer, because you know, you want things to be perfect and you also don't have the money to spend on it. And you're also like working with your friends. So things have taken time. But in a perfect world, I would love to be releasing like every month, every 2 weeks, whatever, like, you know, whatever the official guidelines are for like how often you should release. Like I would love to. I just don't, you know, I just, at this point, it's not like a capability. Although luckily what I've learned throughout this process of like things taking so long is because I've had so much time to sit on things, I've really learned what I want. And like, I've gotten much better at understanding like what each song needs and like exactly where to take it production wise and like what I'll need from which people. And like, the more you work on things, the faster it gets. Like it's gotten more efficient. So in the future, things will be much faster. Like, I'm pretty sure things will be faster. You never know. But as far as I can tell, like the future will be much, much faster and things will be more consistent. That's the goal. And you know, I want this to be my life, you know, so if I can make it consistent, that would probably be the best way to go about it.
Yeah, but you're also mentioning you're a perfectionist. So the perfection, the need for perfection can also block you in a certain way. And I'm wondering how you as a perfectionist know when something is ready to share.
It's kind of just like a gut feeling. Like for me, so the way I judge things is I have a very particular way I judge things. And it's like, to me, here's how I judge it. Specifically my own music. Like if I put out something, my judgment of it is, how would I feel if my favorite artist put out this song? How would I feel if my favorite artist had this album art? How would I feel if my favorite artist like had this Instagram post, you know? So like, that's kind of how I judge myself. So I kind of have this like quality standard of like artists who have a ton of funding. So that's what makes it difficult, because like my standard for quality is way higher. I'm not like settling for things that are less like I'm of course you settle in some ways. Like nothing will ever be perfect. But for me, like it's usually like a gut feeling of like, yeah, I think it's ready. And also like it's more about feeling like it's not ready. Like that's when I know that feeling very well. It's like, we could change that. We could change that, you know? And until we give it a chance to like change those elements, I don't want to move forward with like, I'm not going to release something if I feel like there's elements I would still change, basically. So it's kind of perfectionism, but it's also just like I know in my gut, I'm like, no, this bridge needs to be different, or no, this snare isn't the right sound right now. You know, like you kind of feel it. But yeah, perfectionism totally like it gets in the way in some sense, but it also, it guarantees quality. Like I just, to me, it's like, I care so much about quality over quantity, like you said. And like, if I can guarantee a quality product, like I'd much prefer that than like, you know, be a little looser and like let things go and like whatever. And then you kind of have like a not as great product, you know? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Where did this need to make music start? Like, where did this come from for you?
I've always been writing, like as a kid, in elementary school, I was writing like short stories and like poetry. And it's always been like an outlet of mine to write. I feel like in my life, I felt incapable of sharing, and like for a large period of my life, I felt like I couldn't share my perspective or share what I was going through or feeling. And like, you know, it just has to come out some way. And like, I've learned that like, you can't really like, you can't hide what you feel. You can't hide like your experience, you know, it just like, it comes out one way or another. So luckily for me, like a lot of my like pain that I've experienced in my life has found an outlet in writing. Like it needed to get released, and writing was just the way to do it. And luckily, like I'm really grateful for it, because writing has like heard me when no one else has, you know? And that's why like my songs, it's like, they're my babies, you know? Like if no one listens to them, it's a little sad, but like regardless, no matter what, like I've created like beautiful things that like really represent me, and they, you know, like they've allowed me to, like the songs are a gift to me as well. Like I get to express what I've been through and what I'm going through. So yeah, that's that, like, so it's like a need. I don't really have an option, you know? Like if nothing ever works out, you know, and I end up on the streets, like I'm still going to be writing songs. Like, you know, I can't escape it. It's just like, it's just how I live.
So it's true. My only source of dopamine is you. Friend or fool, 'cause I'd be foolish to be friends with you. Nothing works, nothing on heaven or earth can compare to the missing you. You're the draw that I can never seem to get enough of. 'Cause there's a certain type of pain I fell in love with. I put in my whole heart and always get back nothing. Cause no one falls in love with the idea of something the way I do. No one becomes addicted to a friend like I'm addicted to.
This was Alnef's song Drugs, and now back to the interview. The thing is, I can really relate to that. You know, I used to work as a journalist. Now I'm doing this podcast thing. I work in communications. So writing has always been since I was a child, always been a very important thing for me. The difference, I think, is I never wrote something and then decided to try to sing it. You decided to sing it. And I'm always curious about this moment where people that wrote something down decided to sing, how does that, does it happen randomly? Is it just like a try? Or because, I mean, you do have an incredible voice. I mean, no question about that. And how do you discover this voice for yourself?
Okay, that's actually a great question. I feel like, well, the writing definitely came first. That's for sure. Because I was like always writing. Like as a kid, I didn't really sing much. I was always like more quiet about it. Like, you know, because when you write, it's on a piece of paper and like maybe no one will see it. And like it gets to be like private. When you sing, like anyone who's around can hear you. So I feel like I definitely didn't sing. I was kind of scared to sing for most of my life. Like I was really, really scared to sing in front of people. And then like, I think when I was about like 13 or 14, probably 13, I just like, I would like sing into my phone, record some voice memos, like me singing songs I loved. I sounded horrible at the time, by the way. Like I still have those voice memos. Oh my goodness. They're so bad. But like for me, the way my singing has grown is just like, I guess I was 13 when I started like really like actually trying to sing, but like it wasn't no goal to make a career out of it. Just singing more often, in private, you know, like on my phone, like walking in the street, just like singing something. And then I guess like over time, I went to this school when I was 15, called in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. It was just called Wilkes. We called it Wilkes. It's this like Jewish alternative school for kids who like don't fit in other like mainstream Jewish schools. I'm Jewish, like I'm Orthodox. So I grew up like the Orthodox schools just weren't for me personally, like the more mainstream ones. So I went to this school and this school is just like, it's filled with like incredible creatives, you know, because it's a school for people who don't fit in, and like who doesn't fit in, it's obviously going to be the creatives, you know. So that's where I like really started writing more. Like it was a much more open space to like be yourself and write. So I was writing, there was a little keyboard there I would play. I like tried to write songs, you know, and like that's where like I think it definitely expanded, because in ninth grade I had started writing, like I was in like a more mainstream school, I had started like writing much more poetry. I wrote like one or two songs. But like I still couldn't play the keys at all. Like it was very, very minimal what I could do. And then starting in 10th grade, when I went to this school, like it changed everything. And I started singing much more often. And like, I remember like, I was just so scared to like sing for my friends. Like I had friends there. I would just like, ah, oh, I can't do this. And I would just like sing in front of two people and I would just be like shaking. And then, you know, went from two people to like eight people and then eight people to like 10 and then 10 to 20. And then like, you know, at some point, like a couple years later, I played in front of 700 people and you're like, oh my God, like it's just a muscle, you know? So I think singing is a muscle like any other. I really believe that like, as long, like if someone can like match a tune, they can sing. They just need to practice a little more and get more comfortable. And it's really about building the muscle like any other muscle. But yeah, that's how singing came to be for me. Like I didn't stop. Also, I got like when I was in that school, I would be on the bus with all the kids. Like I would just be like, we'd be driving somewhere. I would just have like panic in my ears, like literally just like listening. And I would just be like singing out loud. I don't know why I was so obnoxious. I just like would sing out loud on the bus. And like some kids were like, yo, shut up. But like, I did that every day. You do that every day for like 8 months, you're going to be a better singer at the end of it, you know?
Yeah. But when, so these kids said, shut up. But then, you know, at some point people must've said, oh wow, who was that? And when was it? Do you remember that?
There were a couple points in my life where people said, wow, that like, you know, like I remember. So I had this like in writing, I think in like elementary school, I had this teacher who, I don't know, she really believed in me. And I loved writing and I loved sharing my writing for the class. Like I'd write these short stories and I was super excited to share them. And she always just like encouraged me and told me how good I was and kind of just like was a voice that was telling me like, you can actually do this. And I still never considered it a career. I just was like, great. Like it made me confident about my writing abilities. And I was always just like that built my confidence to like understand that I'm a good writer. And, you know, there's another moment like when I was like, what I think what got me to share my first things on the internet ever was one of like the mentors in this school when I was 15 in Wilkes, one of the mentors, friend of mine, like very awesome dude named David. And he was like, dude, like you have to post your poetry on Instagram. Like you just have to. And I was like, I don't know. Like no one's going to look at it. Who cares? And you know, like it's funny, like my artist page started as poetry. Like it started off with me like posting like random poetry I was writing at the time, and like no one cared. Like I got like, I don't know how many likes I got, probably nothing, you know? And it started from there. And then over time, like I was ready to share like a song, you know? And the, you know, there were other times like I played, and I would play like, you know, little songs I wrote, and you know, people would like kind of listen in. Like the building was three floors. So we had the basement, first floor, and second floor. And like, I was just in the basement, like working on like whatever I was working on, you know, like trying to figure out piano and like write these little songs. Sometimes people would just make comments like, oh dude, that's really cool. Like you wrote that, you know, like that was, it's really nice. And someone's like, you actually wrote that? And I'm like, oh yeah, I did. And like, that's like a good indication that you're doing something right. And I don't know, people around me, like there were people who were like, shut up. But overall, like in general, it was a very supportive place. And I think people saw potential in me. And, you know, most people weren't like, we got to shut this down. Most people were like, let's see what this kid can do, you know? And like, luckily, like I had like it was a good support system. It was good people around me. And, you know, people maybe on the bus were like, shut up, because you're being obnoxious. But like overall, like people weren't, it wasn't like very critical. Most people were like, interested. They were curious, yeah. Like, okay, what's this 15-year-old, what's this 16-year-old kid up to? You know, like, you know, what's he writing about? And yeah, like that's what got me to get, like, it built the confidence in me. Like, I'm like, you know, I can do it.
And then at some point you do put out your first song on streaming platforms, which was Give Love. I mean, that's the first official Allnef song that you shared with the world.
Yeah.
Did you ever share anything before that and taking it off the internet? Or is that really the first song that you professionally recorded as an artist?
That's the first song I professionally, professional is a big word, because it was literally me and my friend like in a closet. We recorded the whole thing in that school actually. But was the first song ever released. Yeah, there was nothing before that that was like ever put on Spotify. That was like the introduction to me. And it's interesting. People like in that school, people really love that song. And that's what, you know, what got it to be produced actually was I threw a little concert in my school. It was actually really funny. It was like in like the main room. I asked like the principal if I can just take the main room for like the night. He's like, sure. And I charged everyone a dollar per ticket to get in. And like all my friends like came in. They're like, oh, what's going on here? And then I just like played an hour set of like my songs I had written. So basically like I played Give Love at that show. And one of my friends was sitting there. His name is Mizzy, super, super talented, like DJ and producer. And he was like when I sang that song, like everyone got up, started clapping, like people really loved it. And he was just like, we're producing this song. So we ended up producing that song. And like, that's why that was the first song really. Cause he was just like, dude, I'm producing that. And I was like, okay, cool. And then like that's how it turned out.
Was that difficult for you in hindsight? Was that like a difficult thing to do, to record that song professional? Like I'm saying professionally because it sounds super professional. It sounds like a really great song. And it is, but in hindsight, did that take a lot of your courage, or was that something that just felt natural to you to do?
I think like at that point, I wasn't really aware of what I wanted. So the process, it was a whole new experience. I was like, I don't really know how I want things to go. And I was learning as I went along. And like Mizzy was like, hey, like maybe we try this, maybe we try this. And to my mind, I was so used to playing things acoustically, like just on keys, that I was like, oh, the song is going to be just me and a piano. It'll be easy. And then like, once we did that, Mizzy's like, no, we should like bring out the potential of this song, like bring it further than where it is. And I'm like, really, are you sure? And I remember like when he first added like the kick drum, I was like, man, I don't know if I can handle that. Like, that's a lot. Like what, you know, like this is not an acoustic song once you throw the kick drum in there. And it like took me like getting used to it. And like that, I think the hardest part of the process was just like figuring out what I wanted and like being okay with change and like learning like how things work. Cause I had no idea how things worked. And like, even now there's so many things I would do differently. And you know, like you learn as you go.
Like what, for example?
Probably like the mixing mastering process and like my main vocal, like, I don't know. I think my main vocal could have been better. And like, I wish I could just like go back and like remove that main vocal and do it again. But again, like I was just like, I was 17. Like, you know, it was like, it is what it is, you know, and I'm proud of it regardless. And like people connect with it and like, I'm happy, you know, it's like,
Yeah.
It was like the first big song of mine. It was like the first song of mine that people were like interested in. I remember like when it first came out, people were like coming to me and like in the street and being like, hey, like, dude, I heard that song. And I was like, whoa, like it was brand new. I was like, wow, people like actually are listening to this. You know, and even when I first released it, like I was still not even sure like what I was going to pursue as a career. Like pursuing this as a career was like, I don't know, like it'd be awesome. Like I had like two feelings at once. Like on the one hand, I was like, this is going to blow up and I'm going to get famous immediately. On the other hand, I was like, oh, like, you know, like I'm going to go be a therapist. Like, I don't know if I have time to, like my original plan was to, like go be a therapist. So I was like, I don't know if I have time to like do all this and like, who knows if it's going to work out. So it was kind of like a dream, but also just like, it was more like settled in the background. But yeah, like that's what started everything really. So.
But now you do music full time, right? You don't work as a therapist on the side. You don't, is that really?
I would, you don't have but I don't, yeah.
So that song initially was, from how I understood it, was supposed to be an acoustic song, but then you added the kick drum to it, and then it turned out not to be an acoustic song anymore. What I'm trying to get at is production, right? Today, I think you have two, Shlomo and someone else, I forgot his name, that you work
Yosef.
With. Yosef. Shlomo and Yosef, who you work with. Do they do the production, or do you produce?
So off of this upcoming EP, Shlomo has produced Van Gogh, Drugs, and Die for Family. So three of the songs. Yosef produced Rip and Even If You Don't. And then I produced the intro track, like the Vincent intro. But yeah, so basically like I've been working with Shlomo since we were in that, like me, Shlomo, and Yosef were all in that school together. They were in the older division. I was in the younger division. So we only really started working seriously like after they had left school and I had moved to New York and we were just living in the same place. And, you know, like that's when we started actually producing. But the way it usually works is, you know, like, or the way it has worked in the past is like, I've come to Shlomo. I'm like, hey, like, I really want to work on this song. And he'd be like, okay, cool. And then I'll play it for him. He'd be like, okay, let's start. And then we'd start the elements and then it just, you know, and then we, you know, go through the whole process. And like, I would say I'm like an executive producer. I don't like, nothing happens without my approval. I'm very on top of everything. So it's not like I walk in, I like put some vocals down, I leave, and then it's like, oh wow, a song, like everyone else just does the work. Like everything that you'll hear on a song, I was in the room as it was happening. I was likely playing the MIDI, like playing the instruments. You know, like it's like, I know there are artists who just like kind of, they just like lay some vocals down and leave. Like that's not really my style. Like I'm very particular about like going through the process with the producer and like actually being a producer, you know. But the hard part for me, and like the hard part for me has been like considering myself a producer, because I'm just like, I know I can write songs and I know I can sing and I know what I'm good at. Production was never like a thing I knew I was good at. So I'm really learning how to like be more of a producer. And I've been learning how to produce myself in the last like 2 years, like started to learn a bit. And like in the last year, definitely taking it more seriously and trying to learn more and more. And it's a long process. Like it takes so much time and effort, and it's not a passion of mine necessarily to like do all the engineering and like do everything, like all the computer stuff. Just like, it's not as interesting to me as writing the songs and performing the songs. So it's like, it's a challenge for me for sure, but I've been like trying to learn how to produce myself. And I think like the most, like an incredible thing to be as an artist is being self-sufficient and not relying on other people. Like it would be such a blessing to just be able to do everything myself. Things would be way faster. You know, I'd be on my own, like I'd be on my own case, you know? So I've been trying to get more like producing myself, but with this project, it was, yeah, Shlomo and Yosef and me. And like, I'm really excited. Like the intro is the first thing I ever produced to be released that I produced myself. Like I am the producer officially, you know? And, yeah, so that's really exciting. And then in with upcoming music, I've branched out a bit. There are other producers that I'm working with, like another friend of mine, super, super talented, my friend Yona. So we're working on some stuff together, which I'm like super excited about. But that's stuff in the future. So for this project, yeah, Yosef and Shlomo, like they're legends, incredibly, incredibly talented people.
What would you say are kind of the key components, or what makes production great according to you? You know, that there's been an album that you've said was greatly produced or was solidly produced, which was Balloons Don't Float Here by Isaac Dunbar. You consider that to be a very, very well produced album. And maybe if we take that album as a reference, what makes production great according to you? What does good production need?
So honestly, like, even answering this question, I'm like a little scared. I'm like, wow, like, I'm not a producer. What do I know? Like, that's my first thought. Like, what am I going to say about production? Like, what do I know about it? But honestly, I feel like production is like, it's really just what serves the songs, you know? And it's, every song is different. Every song needs something different. And like, it's hard to like be like, oh, this is what every song needs. Like, I think every song needs to, for the creator to like find out what its voice is and give it its voice. And for me, like with Van Gogh, what I thought the voice was, I just thought it needed like that foundation of the piano and like beautiful strings and like, you know, like an orchestra would have been really nice. And like, I had like a whole vision for it. And then, you know, like once production happens, you realize like you can't get everything you want because, you know, like you need a lot of money and this and that, but like every song like has its voice and you got to like figure out exactly how to let it breathe and like give it its voice. Yeah. Balloons Don't Float Here. Isaac Dunbar, incredible, incredible record. Like he's such an incredibly talented producer and songwriter. And like that record, I just remember hearing it. I was like, oh my goodness. Like he was so, I don't even know how old, I think he was like 17 or 16 or 17 when that came out. And like he produced it himself. I was like, oh my goodness. It's incredible. The record is so good. And like, I just feel like he knew exactly what he knew what he was doing. He knew what every song needed. And like, you know, like it's just incredible, incredible music. And I don't know, like I don't hear so many songs where I'm like, that production isn't good. Like overall, like there are things I'll be like, oh, well, the mixing could have been better. Or like, you know, But production wise, like usually people kind of like figure it out as they go. And everyone's got their own like voice to share in their production. I'm still figuring out mine, you know, every song is different. So it's hard for me to be like, this is what every song needs. It's more like every song needs to be given like the space to like breathe and find out like what it needs and let it speak, you know?
Vampires don't love for free. We'll need your payment in advance, a gallon of your gore, and in exchange undying love. The undead make the bestest friends. If you offer us your blood and by your side till all time ends, I'll be the one you hug. Psychopaths can give you all you want and more. Only maniacs can love you like you've never been before. Baby, if you hold tight, then maybe I'll forget this ever was. There's a moon tonight, but it can't brighten up my shades of dark. And if you'll offer me just a tiny little bit of blood, I won't die tonight. I'll live forever, cursed to be your love.
This was Alnef's song, R.I.P. And now back to the interview. And I mean, you must be at a point now where you believe that, you know, what you created with your first project, Vincent, is finally, you know, great enough to, or great to be shared with the world. The one thing I found really interesting in talking about, you know, a bit of the business side of the music industry and making music, you know, music is not just the creative side, but obviously there's a whole business and existential idea that is attached to it. You just started promoting the album on social media and you have a, yeah, kind of like a raffle going where you're giving out $100 for people that pre-order album, I think, on iTunes. Yeah.
So I'm doing like $100 giveaway, yeah.
Okay, so one person that pre-orders the album amongst all of them will get $100 from you.
Exactly.
How did you get this idea? And why do you think, and how do you think this can help with the sales of the album? I mean, obviously, you know, you're giving a financial incentive, that's clear. But tell me a bit more about the idea that you came up with.
Well, I feel like like one of the interesting things about like making music is like you gotta get people, you gotta give people like something to like motivate them. In this scenario, like my goal with this whole giveaway was basically like I wanna see if I can get Vincent to chart on the iTunes charts. Like it's an alternative record. It like could actually chart in theory. It's not like a, it's like it's under the alternative category. You know, enough pre-orders could actually get it charting. And I've seen like I've had friends who have charted before. So I was just thinking like, how can I motivate people to actually pre-order it? Because, you know, no one wants to spend $5 on like an iTunes pre-order that they're never going to listen to. Like most people just listen on Apple Music or Spotify or wherever they're listening. Yeah. So it's like, you got to like convince people to go spend $5. So I was like, honestly, like if you can invest $5, you support me, you get to own the music and you get a chance to win $100. Like that sounds like a pretty good deal to me.
And is because I'm really not an expert on this, so it might be a redundant question, but I seriously don't know. What value does it have now? I mean, obviously you're charting, but does it really have that big of a value to chart on the iTunes charts? Is that like a thing that will help the music be pushed more?
Honestly, I don't really know. But as far as like my whole thought process is just like that would be cool. Like that's the only thing I'm thinking about. Like, okay. Is it going to lead to more people enough, seeing it? Maybe. Like who's checking out the iTunes alternative charts? I don't know. But if I look on the iTunes alternative charts and I see my project, I'm just going to be like, damn, I can't believe I got on that chart. Like even if I'm like number 200, like I was number 200 on the iTunes chart. Like my, you know, it just showed up, you know? So like that's the only thought for me. Just like it's just a cool thing to be able to say. And it, you know, it adds just like a, it just, it adds a cool experience to it. It's not like a huge big deal. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But, you know, it's just like, it'd be cool.
No, I totally get it. I think it's a great idea. Also, you know, why not do it for yourself and for your own ambition and dream to always have been wanting to be on this list, on the charts list. So I totally respect that. And yet it's a challenge, you know, it's challenging to find, you know, smart ways of marketing your music as an independent artist. And with that, maybe, you know, if you could elaborate a bit more on your biggest challenges that you believe you have, what are things that you're struggling with really that are really tough for you as a musician?
I think there's two things that I'm struggling with. One is more like, I think more emotional, and then one is more just like practical. Maybe three things. Oh God, like I got a list building up right now. I think like in terms of like practical struggles, like one is just like making content, you know, like we live in a world of like content creation. You got to make reels, you got to make TikToks. And like every artist I know, every single artist I speak to is just exhausted. Like they just want to write their songs. They just want to put out their music, and like making reels and like putting so much energy and effort into content, especially when content, like most of it is, it doesn't really do well, you know, like it, if you're lucky, you think something will go viral, but overall, like it's really difficult. It's oversaturated, as you said, like the market's oversaturated. Everyone is putting out content. It's just really difficult. And it's kind of sad. It's like, you know, like it used to be like you make music and that was it. And like either you do well or you don't, but now it's like, well, you can make music, but it's more important to make TikToks. And then like, also if your music's okay, that's fine. You know, there's like a, people have lost the focus on quality, you know, like no one cares about like quality art. It's just like, we got to make something go viral. We got to get numbers. And it's just like, it's just so uninteresting. And it feels like it's detrimental to art. And the whole process is just, it's kind of annoying. At the same time, like we're very lucky to be in a time where anyone can succeed if they go viral. Anyone can succeed if they like just get the right moment and are consistent enough. So it's hard. It's, you know, like it's not only a challenge, it's also a beautiful opportunity, but it's definitely like a difficult thing as an artist where like my biggest passion is songwriting and performing my songs, and like making video content isn't like my thing, you know? So that's been a difficult, like a practical challenge for me that I've been trying to learn how to like get better at. Another thing is like another practical challenge is like money, you know, like money's tight. Like every artist is just like if you're not signed to a label, even if you are signed to a label, like everyone's just struggling for money and like trying to pay for creating things, you know, like I just want money to make the things I love. Like, I don't even want, like, I'll figure out how I'm going to live. Like that'll be fine. But like, I just want enough money to like pay for the things I want to make the things I love, you know? So that's another practical challenge. And then like emotionally, like it's, you know, like sometimes you feel like no one cares, and it's such a common thing. And like, I feel isolated in it sometimes, but you know, it's very common. Like, it's like, who's even going to listen? Who's even going to care? Like, does anyone have time for me? Does anyone have time to listen to this project? And you know, like, why doesn't this post get enough likes? You know, and like that, like, there's like that, like doubt where you're like, oh, maybe no one actually cares, you know? And at the end of the day, like, it's a reality. Like, most people are focused on living their own lives and doing what they got to do. And like, they happen to have time for music as well, if they have time for it. Most people aren't like fully invested in someone else's career. But I'm also very grateful for like everyone who actually has, you know, like, I try to focus on the gratitude to like, that's how I combat that feeling. Just like, I'm really just grateful. You know, I'm grateful that I get to do this at all. There are people who can't even do this. There are people who don't even know how to write. And I'm just grateful I get to have that. I'm able to write. I'm able to express myself. I'm able to even put the music out. And I'm lucky enough that there are people who actually do listen to me. There are people who follow me. There are people who are interested.
What are you chasing after now? Like, what's the kind of the stage you want to get to next?
I mean, I think in the long term, what I would love is just to like be able to live off of my career, you know, like actually pay my bills off of my music and be able to like, you know, like actually live, you know, tour the world, like, you know. And it's honestly less to me about the money than it is about the fame. Like, I'm much more motivated by fame than money for some reason. Like, for me, money is just a tool to get what I want, while fame is like, it's a way I can like affect real change in the world and help people. Like, I can actually help like way more people if I'm famous, you know? And I don't know, like, I have that motivation for fame. So what does success look like? Probably to be like worldwide, you know, like a worldwide artist, like recognized, you know, like being at the Grammys would be really nice. Playing Madison Square Garden. Like, I have big dreams of like what I want to do with my career. And, you know, hopefully it'll all happen in due time, you know, like the timeline. No one knows the timeline, but you know, that's the goal.
And when you say help the people, can you elaborate on that? Like, what's the thing that you want to share with the people?
It's really, I think it's like these two things, maybe three things. So on the one hand, like, I feel like my music is just something that people who feel alone in their experiences, like, I feel like they can resonate with my music, you know, because I'm sharing my vulnerable experience and what I found, which is such an incredible thing. Like, one of the best things about making music is people like will reach out to me and be like, hey, you know, I like your song saved me. Your song changed my life. Your song, I always felt this thing and I never knew how to explain it. And your song explained it. And I'm like, whoa, like I can do that for people. Like that's the best privilege ever. Like that's amazing, you know? So on the one hand, like being a voice for people and like being able to like literally help people with the actual music. On the other hand, like encouraging people and like showing people that like anyone can do it. Anyone can share their experiences and like it's, I feel like people are like scared to be vulnerable and share their pain and share their life and, you know, and be honest. And it's like, for me, a big goal of this Allnev as a brand, as a person, and like as me, is just like to teach people like you can be vulnerable and honest. Like, you don't have to hide what you're feeling. You don't have to like be vulnerable and honest and watch what happens. Like, the world changes around you. Like, you affect so much change. And like, you, like, I feel like the world needs more vulnerability and honesty and like people being real. Like, people are just sick of fake stuff. Like, everyone wants something real. Another thing for me that's like motivating is like, I guess because I'm Jewish, you know, I wear a kippah. I'm like, I'm involved in the Orthodox community. I grew up Orthodox. Like, just like being a voice for those people as well. Like, there are a lot of people in my community who, you know, are scared to share music or scared. Like, they don't, you know, like my community in terms of the music has always been pretty limited. It's always been much more like, you know, you're reading a verse from the Torah. Like, it's very like, it's not as personal and vulnerable and real. It's like there's a lack of real, genuine artistry, you know, and people like actually sharing their perspectives. And like, I feel like being able to do that and like affect people from my community who are like, wow, like this kid is wearing a kippah and is on stage in front of a ton of people. Like, that's really cool. Maybe I can do that. You know, maybe I can write songs. And luckily I've had people reach out to me. Like, one girl reached out to me once and she was like, yeah, like, you're the reason, this Jewish girl was like, hey, like, you're the reason I started writing songs. I'm like, oh my God, like that's the coolest thing ever. That's so cool. So like those are like the three things that I'm like pretty motivated by, I think.
What do you think that is, this lack of authenticity and this lack of people, you know, having the courage or, you know, because you mentioned things like, you know, a lot of things are fake and, you know, this lack of authenticity, I guess. What do you think that is? Why do you think people don't dare to do these things?
I don't know. It's hard to like pin it down to like one reason. I just feel like,
yeah,
I think there's just a general fear and like people are just scared to be judged, you know, especially like we have an internet culture where like everything you do is viewed and perceived and mocked and judged. And like, you know, like everyone has their opinion on you and they don't even know you, you know? So it's like, people are really scared to like say what they think and share what they think. And that's definitely a part of it, you know, like the internet culture. I don't know, maybe like, I'm not sure exactly what it is. I just noticed it among people. Like there's something fresh about what I'm doing that makes it seem like, well, if what I'm doing is fresh, there must be a lack of this beforehand, you know, like there must be like there's something missing. And I don't know, that does that make sense? That's like, it's hard to really like pin it down to one thing though.
No, I agree with you for sure. It's not easy, but you're giving the people a piece with your new project that is coming out. And I'm wondering if there's, you know, I'm getting to my final question soon. But I want to make sure that, you know, we covered the album a little bit. Is there any like anecdote or story or feeling or mission that you particularly associate with this upcoming project?
The project to me, like, it's really like going through an outline of my life. You know, we start at Van Gogh, which is like the birth of an artist. Like, it's like the beginning of the story, you know, and it's got hints of the future, you know, like the bridge is like, just the bridge of that song kind of goes through in the life of an artist, really. And that's like the birth of the project. Then we have like the next song, Die for Family, is about my friends. And like, you leave this dark place and you enter this space where like you meet your friends and like things are beautiful and like you love them so much. And then we go to Drugs, which is like a toxic relationship with a friend, you know, like things kind of turn a little dark. It's like, I'm addicted to one of my friends. Like, damn, like this went too far. And then Rip, which goes even further, which is just like, now like there's a vampire, like what's going on? Like we're in this dark world. Like it's a whole nother universe in a sense. And then it ends off with Even If You Don't, which is, you know, it's like I don't know. I felt like it was a good ending to the story because Even If You Don't, we're introduced to this new character. I call the character Her. And we're introduced to her through this song. And it's like, it's a hint toward the future in terms of, I don't want to say too much, but it's definitely a hint toward the future. In terms of like chronologically, that's the order of the record and like how it feels to me. It kind of goes through my life. So it's, on the one hand, I want to give people an insight into my life. On the other hand, like each of these songs, I feel like there's something that people can connect to with each of them. I think so. And you know, like Even If You Don't, it's just a heartbreaking song. Like I really hope people like it. I really hope people like resonate with it. It's just like so sad. And I just have this feeling that like the right audience will find that song. Like they're gonna connect to that one in particular. But I guess like in terms of like sonically, my message is like, hey, look at all the things I can do. Like look at all the genres I can kind of like pull into. And it's kind of like look at what Onev is. This is our introduction to like Onev as the first project ever. So it's kind of like a window into like what Onev is. And then, you know, like I think each of the songs have like their own micro message that can be given over to people and like they can, you know, like take from it.
There's this one thing, and you've touched upon this a lot, and you've said some really inspiring things already. But the last question I always ask artists is, what do you do this all for?
What do I do this all for? It's two sides. So on the one hand, like it's for me. It's like it's truly like I feel like I have to share. I gotta express what I gotta express. You know, like I have to write these songs. They just need to come from me. You know, I don't really get a choice in that. And then like when it comes to releasing it, it's like
it's not mine anymore. And I just have this like belief that once you create something, like it's not yours anymore. Like it's for the world. It's not for you. The world deserves to hear like what you have to share. And I think that that's a message that like everyone should know. Like you make something beautiful, you got to share it. Like it's not meant for you anymore. Like it's yours. You make it, time to share it, you know, time to share it with the world. Cause you can help so many people with it. And I guess like, yeah. So on the one hand for me, like just like having, just like fulfilling myself by like releasing and like creating these things. And then like for other people as well, just like helping as many people as I can, giving people a voice, like showing people like you can be vulnerable, you can be honest. And like, especially people from my community who like have never heard music like this before. And it's like, wow, you know, like I feel like it's a service for myself and it's also a service for the world. And I want to make the world a better place through it. So that's kind of what I'm doing it all for, I think.
Anna, thank you so much for this amazing conversation. I really, really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Miles, thank you so much for having me. It was such a pleasure to talk to you, man. Thank you for having me.
Thinking about you, I can't call you up, even if I want to. I'm down on the floor, and you don't even know.
This was Unsigned Hype episode 28 with Allnef. The track you're hearing right now is called Even If You Don't. You will find the song on Allnef's new project, Vincent. Make sure to support Allnef by checking out his music and following him on social media. And for your weekly Unsigned Hype, make sure to subscribe to this podcast and follow us on all socials as well. All the links are in the show notes below.
Who's hurt, then let you hurt at all. And they say true love waits for you, but I'm afraid I waited too long to ever get it back. So let me explain, I didn't mean any harm. I'm stupid, I can't tell. And you've been chasing somebody else, but I think I'm the one for you, even if you don't. I shouldn't have shown my face that day when you wanted his hands on your waist. It's awful. It hurts me, but not you. You've got a known reputation for being bulletproof, but I take a bullet for you. I'd die to die for you. They say first love hurts the most, but I'd rather. I'm sorry I spoke too soon.
I'm sorry I spoke up and called it love. I'm sorry that you don't know me. You didn't know me the way I want you to. So let me explain. I didn't mean any harm. I didn't mean to do you wrong. No, I don't. You think I'm stupid, I can tell. And you've been chasing somebody else. But I think I'm the one for you.